Well, you know my theory. It's the 20% of the people on the far right and the 20% on the far left that are ruining this country for the rest of us. We deserve better.
The Andy Finn Show. Something special in the airwaves.
We deserve better. We deserve better.
We are back on the Andy Finn Show, and we're talking about the surge and the evaluation of the surge as this is September 10th, the first day of General David Petraeus' testimony in front of Congress. And, of course, we've got a mixed bag, and people are seeing what they want to see. But it's interesting. The president went to Iraq last week. You may remember he made a quick trip over there. Of course, he sneaks out of the White House. They don't tell the pool reporters. They take a few with him, but they don't tell anybody. He's in the air, and he arrives at, I think he went to Bagram Air Base, but he flew into the Anbar province. Maybe that's not Bagram, I don't know. But he flew into Anbar province, and he never left the air base. Now, the quote he had just yesterday was, quote, that he, quote, came back from Iraq encouraged by what I saw. No question there's still hard work to do. There's that phrase. It's hard work. But my resolve is as strong as it's ever been. Yeah, we know, Mr. President. That's one thing you got a huge reserve of is resolve. In fact, some would say stubbornness. Because facts don't seem to change your resolve. But what's interesting is he came back from Iraq encouraged by what he saw. Now, the president never left the airbase. It's too dangerous. And when some of the reporters who've been there came back, actually, I guess it was Joe Biden I was hearing on Meet the Press yesterday. Joe Biden was talking about he just came back from his eighth trip to Iraq. And he said, you know, he went up to Anbar province. He said, but reporters go there. The president goes there. He goes there. He said, you never leave the airbase. You can't leave in the same way you can't leave the green zone. He said, it's not like we went out in a convoy of some sort. He said, I needed to get someplace back to Baghdad or wherever. He said, you wouldn't get in a convoy and go. You can't. I think they had a helicopter problem, so they couldn't get whatever. He had to wait a few hours. The point is, there's only these isolated pockets, these oases of protected land. And of course, conservative talk show hosts go over there and come back and report how good things are, or John McCain in his fit of hyperbole talked about, you know, how nice it was to be able to go into a bazaar and shop, but he was guarded by 100 troops and a helicopter gunship. And Mike Pence, I think it was, of Indiana, talked about how it was like shopping at a Indiana mall or a fair or something, a summer bazaar or something in Indiana. But, of course, it's nothing like that. And what's interesting is how this has been played. There have been a number of Congress people that have gone over to Iraq, and some of them, Democrats, skeptics on the surge, have come back and said some very positive things about what the Pentagon showed them. But, of course, they've been shown what the Pentagon wants them to see. I could imagine you could take reporters or Congress people on a tour, and if you wanted to paint the worst possible picture of the situation in Iraq, you could take them on a completely negative tour. Well, what happened was they were taken on a completely positive tour, as near as I can tell, over the last few weeks, and many of them, including some Democrats who were a surprise to people when people back here heard, saying the surge seems to be having some effect. So this is being pretty well orchestrated by the administration. Now, again, I'm not saying David Petraeus isn't being as honest as he can be. I'm saying that it's difficult for him to step outside his bias and evaluate the system, the situation, dispassionately. Now, having said that, we also know that there are these other reports out there. As I mentioned, the GAO report, the National Intelligence Estimate, there's one or two others that escape me at the moment. But those have questioned whether, in fact, for example, sectarian deaths are down 75% since last year, as Petraeus has said. The National Intelligence Estimate basically said that they're puzzled over how the military designated attacks as combat, sectarian, or criminal. Now, Petraeus denied this today, but the there was a senior intelligence official that said, you know, if a person is killed and the bullet went through the back of their head, it's considered sectarian violence, you know, because that's how a lot of them are executed. But if it went through the front of the head, it's a criminal act, and so it doesn't count as sectarian violence. And that the Pentagon's numbers on sectarian violence exclude Sunni on Sunni violence, Shia on Shia violence, and it excludes all car bombs. And so it's under this basis that Petraeus is saying that there's been a 75% reduction in sectarian violence. The other piece of this is when they don't count car bombs now, and Bush was asked about it, you know, that this was sort of a subjective rationale, and the way he explained it in an interview back in April was, quote, if the standard of success is no car bombs or suicide bombings, we've just handed those who commit suicide bombings a huge victory. Meaning, if we tell them that our standard of success will be no suicide bombings, then people who just want to prove the U.S. wrong will go out and commit suicide bombings. And this is an interesting thing that's worth taking a minute about. It's really fascinating the way the argument on the conservative slash Republican Bush administration side gets twisted here. The argument is that, well, since our enemies say X, we should do the opposite. In other words, Al-Qaeda says that Iraq is the central front in the war on terror for them. It's a central front in their war against us. So we should therefore assume that we have to fight, have a last stand here. Or Al-Qaeda says that they will drive us from Iraq with our tail between our legs. You know, Osama and his boys say this kind of stuff. And so therefore, we can't leave. We have to show resolve. No, you know, it's possible that retreat is the right course of action. Meaning, within the war on terror, that retreat from Iraq, a strategic redeployment, is okay, even if Osama bin Laden or Al-Qaeda or other people who are our enemies are going to taunt us and say, nah, you're chicken. We should not be talked into playing their game. It would be like a high school, let's take a college football team, where it's fourth down and one at the 50-yard line, and the other team is yelling out, go for it, you chickens, you don't have the nerve to go for it, we're going to kick your butts. We say, oh yeah, well, we're going to go for it. No, you do what's best from your point of view. You ignore what advice they're giving you or the things they're saying. The idea that we put so much stock in what Al-Qaeda says is ridiculous. And I do think that it's a red state thing or a conservative, neoconservative Republican thing that says we got to be macho about this. In other words, if we show weakness, they'll walk all over us. No, we're churning up 150,000 troops, 168,000 now, whatever it is. You know, we're breaking our military, essentially. The military are the ones that are concerned about this more than anybody else. We are overextending ourselves. We couldn't handle another hotspot if we needed to, at least not with troops, boots on the ground. We've extended the deployments for our troops to 15 months, and we still are having trouble getting a handle on all this. So to say that, oh, we must stay there because to leave would be to show weakness, or to leave would be to hand a victory to... No. If it's in our best interest to leave so that we can be stronger and redeploy or take action elsewhere, whether it's going into Pakistan to get bin Laden or whatever it is, then we should do what's best for us. But this fear we have that, oh, if we lose Iraq, you know, it's not at all clear that an orderly withdrawal will cause us to lose Iraq any more than it will be in 5 years. People are just assuming that they know that if we stay, it'll get better, and that if we leave, it'll be a disaster. You know, it's possible if we leave, it won't be a disaster. It's possible the Iraqis will get it together. Now, it's going to take them a couple of years, a few years, and there may very well be a great deal of bloodshed. But there may be bloodshed in 5 years when we leave. Actually, whoever gets elected president is going to put an end to this within 12 months. So it'll be over by January of 2010. But Bush is content to stay there until he leaves office. I think there's two reasons behind this. It's very clear he doesn't plan to budge, and he's going to keep at least 100,000 troops in Iraq until he leaves office. There's, oh, and by the way, Petraeus did say he could see a drawdown. He's going to have a token drawdown by January. He's willing to let one brigade go. That's 4,500 soldiers. And he envisions by June of next year, I think it is, as many as five brigades gone, meaning 38,000 troops, meaning the surge plus 10,000 troops removed. So a year and a half after the 2006 election, they're saying they'll be get you back down to pre-surge levels, maybe slightly below. And that's if everything goes right. So we'll see about all of that. But the point about the Bush administration is that George W. Bush is going to stay in Iraq until he leaves office with at least 100,000 troops and maybe closer to 130. And here's why. He's got two reasons. The first is he doesn't want to be the guy that lost Iraq. So if another president pulls out when they get in office, he can look back and say, hey, I wasn't the one that pulled out. If we'd stuck it out just a little longer, another 6 months, like they always say, it could have worked out. It would have worked out. That's the first thing, kind of the short term, I told you so. The long term, I told you so, is his legacy. And put yourself in the position of a president who's, for the last few years, been reading bios of presidents. You know, I've always thought it was interesting. Jack Nicklaus always talked about, as he got into his 40s, he talked a lot about the history of golf and how fascinated he and his wife were with the history of golf. Well, of course you're fascinated with it. It's part of your legacy. You're going to be part of it. You are part of it. You're going to be one of the great ones. Just like Bush is one of this elite club of presidents. So he starts reading presidential biographies in the last few years. He's read three books about Washington, he's proud to tell people. And he's been reading about Harry Truman, because Truman had to put up with a lot of naysayers. And he was ultimately proven right, most would agree, about holding the line in Korea. But he was vilified for it and couldn't run for office again. Bush sees himself as this kind of tormented soul, and from his point of view, in 50 years, the world might look at it differently. So when he looks at his legacy, there's no upside to ending the war now. For him to say, I'm going to pull the troops out, I'm going to take the Baker-Hamilton report, I know 60% plus American of the total American population wants us out, I'm going to give the people what they want. No. It isn't simply because that's not leadership. His problem is that he cannot pull out and then expect to have his legacy intact. If this roll of the dice is going to work, he's got to stick with it. Because if in the next 20 to 50 years, somehow the forces come together that bring democracy to Iraq and then the Middle East to make things work out, if things get better, he wants to be able to point back and say, see, going into Iraq was not only the right thing, but staying the course was the right thing. I'm the Churchill of my generation. I'm the Harry Truman of my generation. So staying gives his legacy the possibility, however slim, of working out, because his legacy is Iraq, and leaving ensures that it can't work out. So it just makes sense to me. Bush is going to stay in Iraq because, A, that's what works for him. he really believes it, I think, but he doesn't listen to other people and he doesn't take in other views very well, and he is in a bubble. But also, he's going to hand this off to the next president. And the next president's going to be the one that takes the heat for withdrawal if there's heat to be taken. In any case, we're going to be back right after this.
Hi, I'm Andy Finn, and I am begging you to listen to my show at www.andyfinn.us.
The Andy Finn Show, Uncommon Talk Radio.
We are back on the Andy Finn Show, and I'm going to end tonight by not talking about Iraq. We're moving on to Larry Craig. So today, September 10th, Larry Craig, this is the senator from Montana, who announced his intention to resign at the end of September, not that he was going to resign, but that his intention to resign after he got caught in the men's room in the Minneapolis airport playing footsie with an undercover cop who believed that he was sending the signals that a gay man sends to have anonymous sex in the bathroom, and they were trying to put an end to the sex in the bathroom. Larry Craig has decided that he is going to try to rescind his guilty plea. So you probably know the situation, but Larry Craig, this burst onto the scenes when, you know, I'm trying to remember who broke the report. I guess it was Politico.com. But Larry Craig pled guilty to a misdemeanor of lewd behavior or something in an airport. But the way it went down, well, we'll get to the way it went down in a minute. But basically, he got caught red-handed soliciting sex from a undercover agent in the men's room. And Larry Craig was the guy sending the signals and checking out this guy inside this stall in this bathroom in the Minneapolis airport that's off the beaten track and is known for as a place where gays go to meet. Now, every airport I've ever been to, there's no airport bathroom off the beaten track enough that I could imagine men meeting in there. But hey, I guess I don't know everything there is to know about bathrooms at major airports. But Larry Craig insisted at the time that he wasn't doing any signaling. It was a misunderstanding. He has a wide stance. When he sits down, he spreads his legs apart real far, so his foot may have been inside the under the partition and essentially inside the other guy's stall, and he may have touched the other guy's foot. And he did bend down to pick up a piece of paper, he admits, a piece of toilet paper, because, of course, we all bend down and clean up toilet paper on the floor of men's rooms, don't we? Anyway, so it's all rather absurd what he claimed. And if you've heard the audio tape that's out there of the cop talking to him, that carries part of it. The other piece of this is that Larry Craig was the officer who has no reason to lie, because he didn't know it was a U.S. senator when he started this whole thing. But Larry Craig peeked into this guy's stall he spent 1 or 2 minutes waiting for the stall next to this guy to open up, and he peeked into the stall a couple of times, and they dropped that charge, and then he did all this behavior of tapping his foot, and that didn't make it on the tape, but apparently tapping your foot is the signal, and putting your hand in the other guy's stall, and he ran his hand underneath the surface of the other guy's stall 3 times, et cetera, et cetera. So he got caught red-handed. He gives his press conference a week and a half ago, and he says, "I am not gay. I have never been gay." Well, I don't know about you, but that strikes me as a lot like, "I am not a crook, and I did not have sex with that woman." And in both cases, Nixon was a crook, and Clinton did, in fact, have oral sex with that woman. So as soon as he uttered those words, I knew that Larry Craig was a closet homosexual. He's married, but he's certainly conflicted about it, I suspect. Now, the other piece of this is that his argument as to why he wants to rescind his guilty plea is that he was under stress, he was under duress, because the Oregonian statesman or whatever the do we say Oregon? No, it's Idaho, I guess. The Idaho Statesman, a newspaper, the major newspaper in the state, had been doing an investigation of him and looking into whether he was gay, or let's put it this way, whether he had sexual encounters with men in situations like this. And they had found Republican operative, I think it was. I think it was them, or maybe it was the Politico. But somebody found a Republican operative who was willing to say that, yes, I've had sex with Larry Craig, Senator Larry Craig. And they held on to this story for months and weren't going to run it because they didn't, well, they had journalistic standards about it, and they didn't have independent confirmation. Craig denied it and wouldn't give them an interview. And so they held on to it, thinking, we don't know absolutely for sure. And then the story broke that Larry Craig got arrested for soliciting sex from a man in a bathroom in the Minneapolis airport on his way home from between Washington, D.C., on his way back to Idaho. I keep thinking it's Idaho. I hope I got the right state here. Anyway, when that happened, the Statesman published its article. And it turns out that there are other reported sightings of Larry Craig and gay sex. So Craig's argument for why he is not, he shouldn't have to plead guilty, he should be able to rescind his guilty plea for this misdemeanor of lewd behavior in this men's room, is that he was confused, he was under duress, he knew he was being investigated for gay sex. And so when this came out, I guess it sounds like a plausible argument to him that if another accusation of gay sex comes up, that it's stressful, and obviously I wouldn't want that to come out. I wouldn't want to go to trial, so I pled guilty trying to keep it quiet. And I didn't even consult a lawyer. The first thing he said when this broke was, I should have consulted a lawyer at the time and not pled guilty. Well, the problem is then it could go to trial, and it would be public, and he didn't want it public. But the other piece that's left out of this that people, if you don't read carefully, don't know, is that Larry Craig was let go. He was charged with this misdemeanor, given his ticket, and he went home. And he thought it over. Not just for a day or two. And not just for a week. Larry Craig pled guilty 27 days later. And he pled guilty by mail. So he had almost a month to think about this. He had a month to contact a lawyer. He had a month to decide what to do. And here's what he did. It doesn't take a genius to figure this out. He did a calculation. He didn't tell anybody. Didn't tell a lawyer. Didn't tell his best friends. Didn't tell his staff. Or his chief of staff, didn't tell his wife that he was falsely accused of, you know, there's a misunderstanding in a men's room because I have a wide stance. Can you believe this? This is hilarious. No, he kept it hush-hush, pled guilty on the misdemeanor, mailed it in along with his fine, figuring that who's ever going to know about this? How would this ever get out? Well, it did get out. And then he denied that it went down the way it went down. But he's got the guilty plea on the books. So his logic is that if he only can get this rescinded, his guilty plea rescinded, then the Senate Ethics Committee wouldn't have a reason to investigate him because, you know, he's no longer pled guilty to this misdemeanor charge, and he can stay in the Senate. Well, I guess he could stay in the Senate in that he probably won't be drummed out of the Senate. He probably won't be expelled from the Senate for this. But he certainly can't win re-election. And he's certainly not going to be helping the Republicans if this man stays in the Senate through the 2008 election. If you remember the Firestormer protest when this broke, he didn't last a week. The calls from other senators for him to resign came out immediately, and they kept coming, and the pressure built, and the pressure built. He finally held a press conference and announced he was getting out, and then the pressure was gone. And that's when he decided, well, actually, as he decided what to say, he obviously was planning this those few days, that he might not have to resign. But the idea that rescinding his plea is going to solve his problem in any way, the Firestormer protest will come back. The Republicans are going to get nervous again. And that's what's really, in a way, most interesting about this. You know, the Democrats don't care if he rescinds his guilty plea and he stays in the state. In fact, they'd love to see him run for re-election next year because they'd have a chance to take a seat in a state that otherwise they got no chance of capturing a Senate seat from the Republicans in Idaho. But the Republicans were so adamant about this, in part because it was an election year coming up. But the other thing that's interesting is that the Republicans treated this very different than they did David Vitter. If you remember, Senator David Vitter of Louisiana was found to have been on the phone list of the D.C. madam, meaning that he had women come to his place and give him a massage and get sex from them. Now, he did a press conference with his wife, and she stood by him. And I don't think one Republican called for his resignation. I forget if they're doing an ethics investigation. But the point is that in the Republican Party, you can withstand a sex scandal. But a gay sex scandal? No. That is too much in the Republican Party. I don't know if it'd be too much in the Democratic Party, too. And perhaps there's a standard here for nice people that it's okay to use the telephone to call a call girl to come to your hotel room or your apartment, but it's not okay to go for anonymous sex in a men's room. And while I'm with them that it's not okay to go for gay sex in a men's room, I got to tell you that the standards for Congress ought to be higher than it's okay to use prostitutes, too. So it's interesting how this has played out right now, how this is playing out, really, because Larry Craig is now fighting for his political life. He may be getting counsel behind the scenes that says that, you know, he still needs to get out. But for right now, he's fighting it. So it'll be interesting to see if the state of Minnesota will rescind his guilty plea. The initial reports out today, he just filed this thing this morning. The initial reports out today were that the prosecutor is going to argue against it, saying he already pled guilty. Why would you let him out of a guilty plea, especially since he took 27 days to do it? But I'm sure the Democrats are there hoping, let him out, let him out. It would really help us in the next election. And the Republicans, I'm sure, are just hoping that Larry Craig will go away. In any case, that brings us to the end of another edition of the Andy Finn Show. I'll be back next Monday night, and hopefully we'll have this whole surge thing settled by then. In any case, you can read more about my writings and hear my previous shows at my website at andyfinn.us. Until next week on WEBR, remember, do it. Don't doubt it.